This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Insight. 1, 2, 3, 4. What is up, guys, and welcome back to a new podcast of Grit Grind Girona. Today, once again, I'm joined by a very, very cool guest, and let's hop right into the introduction of this guest. From the punchy Ardennes climbs to the high-speed chaos of the World Tour, Peter Vakoc made his mark as a fearless and versatile bike rider, a Czech national champion, a winner of Brabantse Pijl, and a stage race conqueror. His career was on a meteoric rise, but then, in 2018, everything changed. Brutal training crash in South Africa threatened to end it all. Yet, true to his warrior spirit, Peter didn't just recover, he redefined himself. After fighting his way back into the World Tour, he took on a whole new challenge, gravel racing. And, once again, he's proving himself among the best in the world, dominating the toughest off-road endurance events. Join us as we dive into the highs, the heartbreaks, and the ultimate reinvention of Peter Vakoc, right here on Grit Grind Girona. Peter, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing good. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for accepting me in your lovely home with lovely view of Girona. I think one of the better days these kind of weeks to have a cool view up from your balcony. And
finally the sun is out, and it has been unusually rainy, but still good enough to do a proper training, so not too bad.
Exactly. What have you done today? It's good weather outside.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had a scheduled rest day, and this morning when I woke up, was really cold and wet still. So I was like, oh, it's actually not too bad. But then I saw the sun was out. But yeah, I needed to do some bike maintenance, clean up the bike, get a new tires, refill the sealant, and get the bike ready for another hard week, and also for the upcoming races, because the start of the season is really around the corner, and yeah. I've already done few races, but from now on it will be just full gas.
Yeah, you told me a while ago, I think last week when we texted each other, like, can we do that? I was asking you, can we do the podcast? Maybe it's kind of cool to do it around Trucca, of course, you know, with you're one of the... Well, winner from last year, of course, from the Trucca race, but also for this year, probably one of the big favorites. Of course, I was thinking, it can be really cool to be doing it around Trucca. But then you told me I'm gone for such a long time already before Trucca. So, again, thanks very much for doing this today. I think you have a busy schedule like almost everybody nowadays. And it's cool to be doing this. Yeah. So... I already before we started the podcast talked to you a little bit about it, but my idea about this podcast is to first of all get to know you a little bit better through some quick fire questions, and after that we can talk a little bit about how you got in this sport, and then of course, as this being a podcast called Grit Grind Girona, we will also afterwards be having a quick fire question round about Girona, and then I think it's nice to eventually later in the podcast. Look a little bit towards what's coming up for this season and maybe after as well. So that's basically what the idea is about this podcast. And I think, let's just dive right in into the first round of quick fire questions. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
Let's try to have some short questions, short answers, because with everybody up till now I've had at the podcast, everybody was having these big answers, and we can talk a little bit more about all the answers after the question. So here we go. What is your proudest achievement in your sport?
I think winning the Brabantse Pijl.
What has been the toughest moment?
Definitely the big injury that you already also talked about.
What languages do you speak?
Oh, that's a good question. I speak Czech as my primary language. Then I speak English. I'm quite fluent in French, in Spanish, and I can get by in German and in Italian.
Wow, that's a lot. Who's one person you look up to for inspiration?
Yeah, it's kind of changing, but yeah, first who comes to mind, it's my coach, Simon Kessler, I would say.
Okay. What is your dream in sports? What is still your dream? Do you have any?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest dream was doing the tour, which I did twice. And yeah, now I kind of live the dream. I love the setup I have. So it's not like a particular race or achievement, but it's just like, yeah, keeping it up the way I have it now, and maybe even like improving it a bit.
Nice. What is your favorite sport outside of cycling?
Oh, I love winter sports. It's cross country skiing, probably.
Okay. If you could have a conversation with anybody, who would it be?
I would love to talk to Andre Agassi.
Andre Agassi?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. Good answer. Who is the funniest athlete you know?
Probably Julien Alaphilippe.
Okay. Are you more of an early bird or a night owl?
Early bird, definitely.
If you could visit any country tomorrow, where would you go?
I would go to Iceland.
Iceland?
Yes. Yeah.
What is a podcast or book you would suggest to others?
Like most recently, would be The Tools, a book about psychology, really interesting one. And yeah, that one.
What is your favorite movie?
Pulp Fiction.
Okay. And last question, what's one thing on your bucket list?
Yeah, if it's full. I don't know which one to choose.
You've got more.
I've got more. I've got more, but
okay.
Yeah, it's yeah, right now they are racing Cape Epic, so it's definitely to come there again. So that's a big one.
Cool. You've been there twice already.
Twice already.
Last year and 2023 as well?
Yeah.
Why are you not there this year?
Because I didn't find a partner. Actually, the Kenyan mountain bike marathon team stopped, so I was would be difficult. But I found an interesting partner for next year. So hopefully it will work out. Cool. And now, like watching the Cape Epic, I really have the itch, and I miss it more than I thought.
Yeah, Epic is one of the for people who don't know, one of the biggest mountain bike races in the world, right?
Yeah, it's an 8-day stage race in South Africa. It's
8 days. Wow.
8 days. It's very hard, but really beautiful, and it's very cool event.
Yeah, and it's actually right now, right?
Right now, yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So every day you're following what's happening and these kind of things.
Yeah, I do. As I said, I miss it more than I thought. And actually, 2 years ago, I was close to a podium in the stage. So I think that's really the goal for next year.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for the answers. I think to some of the answers we will come back in a second when we're talking about more things about what happened in the past already. A couple of things I want to ask a little bit more about is first of all, languages. Wow, you speak a lot.
Yeah, I think I'm quite like naturally good at it, and I enjoy it, and
did you learn? Learn in school?
At school, I started with English and German, and then I was racing in France, so I kind of like knew I would like to go this path of like try to become pro through like racing in French teams. So I started learning French, and it was a good choice because then I really ended up racing in a French team, and nobody really spoke English there, like not just on the team, but around. I lived in like a small village. So
for what team was it?
It was CSA Etup, small amateur team, but with a lot of successful riders going through, like Thibaut Pinot or Adam Yates. He was there a year after, so plenty of good riders. But yeah, we was located in like a quite a small village, and after a few weeks, my basic learnings of French really improved. So
nice.
So I became fluent, and I was also mentioning Julien Alaphilippe. So I think like it really also I spent many years with him on the team, and it really also helped like to get close with him. So French has been like really useful, and Italian I started learning actually during Giro d'Italia, where one of our like masseurs was sick or injured or something, so we had like an external one who was Italian, and he didn't speak any English, and I spent 3 weeks every day an hour with him, an hour and a half. So he started like teaching
me. With like Google Translate or?
No, he started like, you know, explaining like things like how are the legs and how was the day. So just basic things, and, you know, just like being also immersed in it, like on TV. So I started like learning with Duolingo, and I spend I love Italy. Spend a lot of time there. A lot can happen in
3 weeks' time.
It was very basic, but then I could start like learning, you know, Italian food and like how to book accommodation and how to get around, and I think like once I got through French, the other languages like Italian, like similar languages like Italian or Spanish were easy. Like French was a tough one, but then it got easier. But on the other hand, I never learned Dutch or Flemish, even though spending like, I don't know, 8 years,
long time,
9 years on
Quickstep.
Quickstep and then Alpecin. I understand a bit, but I cannot speak anything, and this one really didn't go like naturally. Right. Yeah. That's tough one.
Maybe if you find some time in the future for Duolingo, then
I tried a bit. I was never committed, much. But the thing is, like, all the, you know, Belgians and Dutch people, they speak English. English. That's also the thing. Like, I started learning German pretty early, and was quite good, but I never used it much. And it's like, you can speak pretty much with everybody in Germany or with most people English. So that's not the case with French, and not. Spanish or Italian. Yeah. So those were more important, and I'm also like more immersed in them.
You were talking already a little bit about Julien Alaphilippe again. Told me you think he's the funniest athlete you know. You spent quite a lot of years with him on the team, right? In what kind of way was he funny? Like, was it before and after races in a team bus?
What are the things that come to mind first? Funny moments, always like, you know, always up to some little jokes and in a good mood, and he's always like, he always like, you know, caught me that he said something like as a joke, but I didn't get it, and then I was like, oh, I'm stupid. So I mean, like, funny in this way that. Yeah, you are never bored with him. It's cool, not like this kind of like funny that like he would do like silly stuff, but it's more like always doing something fun, making like small jokes and keeping the mood like high and keep it fun.
Nice guy to be having on your team around. Right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's
What is Well, you told me that maybe your favorite sport outside of cycling is like winter sports. Over here, we are pretty close to Andorra. Have you been already?
Yeah. Actually, I lived in Andorra for a couple of years.
All right, cool.
So,
where in Andorra?
In La Massana. I lived there 4 years probably, and like one of the main reasons was because I just missed winter, and I think since I turned pro, I didn't do any like cross country skiing or downhill skiing or whatever
for
5 years.
And that was in the contracts that you were.
I mean, like cross country skiing was fine, but there was somehow not really time for it because there was not.
Yeah.
For example, there was not like enough snow in December in Prague, and then like in January I was already racing in Australia or in Argentina, and then once the season was underway, it was not really. You're you know, maybe I got one day or something, but the years before I was used to. Spending weeks and weeks in the mountains and doing cross country skiing as a good good winter training. So yeah, then was the opportunity to live in Andorra, and I really loved. I started backcountry skiing, like nothing crazy, just on the ski slopes. So to keep it safe, but it was just amazing training, and I would spend there. You can already do it in November, in December, and even like when the season was getting closer, I could still do a few days. So I went again from like zero skiing to maybe 20, 30 days.
Did you go winter. More often now?
Where you're not like no, because like now I went maybe 5 times this winter, because I did 2 or 3 trips, always like for 2-3 days. But yeah, when I lived there, it was just simple, because you could go, you were there in 15 minutes, we were skiing. Now I thought I would be going more often, but yeah, somehow it was not easy, or not that easy to find time that often, but yeah. I'm glad I did it at least a couple of times.
When I ask you about a country you would visit if you could tomorrow, you told me about Iceland, and I haven't been before, but I know it's a beautiful country. But why specifically Iceland?
Oh, I love nature. I love the places where they have some incredible nature, and actually I plan to visit it this summer for a race, and to stay there also for a couple of days. And yeah, just like last week we were planning the trip a bit with my girlfriend, and yeah, I just saw the picture from there, and so like when you ask about country, I was like, yeah, Iceland. I think it looks insane, like to me, like the combination of like the vegetation, like the green grass there, and the lava field, and the rocks, and the ocean. So that, yeah, that's really my thing. I really love this this kind of like rough nature. So like last year we went for holidays to Azores Islands, and was very like also like this kind of like quite wild environment, and that's really my thing.
Nice. I think when I had Diederik Dalen in the podcast a while ago, he as well told me about the gravel race in Iceland. It was one of his coolest trips ever he's done so far. So so people who want to race the gravel race in Iceland this year, you know Peter is coming this year as well. Eh?
Yeah,
or not.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Oh, cool. Nice.
You know, it will be one of the big objectives, but also I want to stay a couple more days and explore it there.
For sure, yeah. When is the race?
Around 20th of July.
July, in the middle of summer. Nice. I think it's pretty cool when I asked to you about what is your dream. Like a lot of people have like goals or dreams or these kind of things, what they're still planning on doing in the future. And I think the answer that you gave me was actually pretty cool, that you're like, how do you say it? Like already some sort of living the dream right now, right? That you have picture for yourself something that you want to do or have, and that you actually am aware of the things you are doing right now, because I think a lot of people always think about things in the past. Oh, that was such an amazing time, but I didn't really like experience it deeply. But I think, well, with your answer you gave me, you are experiencing that what you're doing quite deeply right now, right?
Yeah. It really is like that. I really enjoy the setup I have now, and there is nothing that would like really like stand out or would be like crucial. It's just I love traveling to new places, or to return to some like really nice places, and it just gives me opportunity to really like have pretty much all year just like a good balance of hard racing and like some like goals that are purely like performance, but also some events like this race in Iceland that's like as much about the performance as much as about the trip, and also like racing on gravel, it like allows me to kind of like design my season. There are only very few races that are like absolutely like must do's or like obvious goals, but then you have so much to choose from, and and I can build the season to have the balance, also like spend enough time with my girlfriend. She can like accompany me for the races, and yeah, it allows me to spend the winter here in Girona, which I absolutely love. So yeah, I really enjoy this kind of freedom.
Nice. I think we will be talking about this freedom feeling a little bit more whenever we'll be talking about the switch from road cycling towards like gravel. And I think this is a good moment to be going back in time to like can you tell me like how did you started with cycling?
I think it was thanks to my parents that at first was the way how we spent holidays and weekends. We just rode the bike a lot, and I think it's quite typical for people in Czech Republic. Everybody has bike, everybody rides quite often, or most people, but like racing is not that popular, except maybe for like mountain bike marathon racing. And yeah, somehow we found like there are some races, like mountain bike marathon races, and my dad took part with some friends, and there were kids race. And so yeah, I raced. I have two brothers. One is just two years younger than me, so we did that kind of everything together. So we both raced a lot. We started on the mountain bike, which yeah, I mean like until I was like, I started like the first races maybe 5-6 years old, but that was, you know, just like going to races. It was not training or something. It was just something I enjoyed and did a few times a year, and then get more and more serious. And I think when I was like 12-13, I you know, really like started to train, you can say it. Before it was just
from that point on that you were like already had the dream to become like a cyclist or professional?
I don't know, maybe probably came a little bit like later, but I started with road when I was maybe like 13-14. Did few first races, so still like I had like a cyclocross bike with road tires for the summer, and then kind of like out of necessity I joined a road team, because back then I were like a small family run team that we raced with friends and kind of like our parents were and parents of my friends were running it, like kind of like dissolved, and everybody went to bigger teams, and there was not a really good mountain bike team at the time. So, and my brother wanted to join a really good road team in Prague, so I was like hesitant at first, and then I joined it with the vision of like racing mainly mountain bike and then like train with them, do a few races. But yeah, within a year I was pretty much like only racing on the road and track, and yeah, I loved it and was improving in it. And maybe yeah, when I was like 16-17, I started dreaming about being a pro and looking into the ways how to do it, and my goal became like to be a really good junior so I can race abroad. And that was also the time when I started learning French, because I was like, yeah, I want to race in French. That's because somehow I found out somewhere that like a good way how to become a pro is to race in France. And so yeah, that was maybe it started then the dream.
Yeah. Did you when you were running for the French team, were you still living in Prague or were you living somewhere else?
No, I lived in France. Actually, first already when I was junior, I started racing for the UCI team. UCI has a World Cycling Center at their headquarters, which is like mainly for countries that are not so like developed or that don't have like developed like infrastructure that much for cycling. So like, yeah, I think I was there kind of like from the richest country, you can say, that I was like on the edge of maybe Czech Republic of like being part of the program or not. There were mainly guys from Africa, from Asia, like then very Eastern Europe. So, but yeah, it was good start, very good race program, good education in a way of training, and a good group of people.
This was, I think, like...
It was 2010 and 2011. Yeah. Okay. Actually, just this weekend, I was racing with Tsege Bugurmai, who who we raced together there back in 2011 at this program, and he's now racing gravel as well. He did I think 10 years in World Tour, and last
year.
Is he
living in Girona?
Yeah. So that's cool. Still good riders went through this program. And then after 1 year or a few months in juniors and 1 year in under 23 that I lived there in Switzerland, I just moved just over the border to this French team that we raced actually often with, because this team is based maybe 10-15 kilometers from a Swiss border. Mm-hmm. So we often raced in France, and I saw the team, and they had really good resume of riders pretty much every year. At least one World Tour rider. Made pro. So the year I was racing there was Warren Barguil, another amazing rider. Yeah. So I was really good team with a great coach, and it was the brother of Thibaut Pedon, Julien Pinot, the coach there, who was also coach at FDG, so it had this connection to World Tour, and that was really a perfect fit for me.
And I think from that point on, results were coming pretty fast, right? I think I saw, I've of course looked into some results of you in the past, and I think as well, I think under 23, I think in the European Championships, a really, really good result and these kind of things, right?
Yeah, I was second at the European Championships, but that was especially the third year. So the second year of under 23, I was racing in France. I had some decent results, good enough to stay in the team or to maybe step up a bit, but not really to turn pro yet. But I think I was on a good track. So, but the year later started the development team of Quickstep. So, and I had a chance to join it, and that was really vital, I would say, for my career. And
this was in 2013, 2014.
It was 2013. Yeah. And I had there in the team. We had a lot of success. It was kind of the Quickstep team that was the whole team was strong, and it was not just one or two riders getting results, but pretty much everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was strong at the first part of the season, but didn't really have good results. And I think it really turned beginning of June or something, when I finished second on a race in Belgium. And then just a few days later, I was second in the first stage of Tour of Slovakia and won the GC eventually. And after that, won a race in Spain. And then the results kept coming. And then, on the top of that, I was second at the European Championships. So I had maybe five UCI victories in 2 months. I just had this it's crazy. Something clicked and I was just flying. So it was amazing. Yeah. And then I started to get some offers from teams, but not yet from Quickstep. And then I think a week or two after the European Championships, I did another UCI race that was held in Czech Republic, and I won it. And then, I got a call from Patrick that I can join the team, and that was cool. That was great. So,
what is how long have you been at the Quickstep team?
7 years.
7 years. What is Patrick Lefevre like?
I would say he's strict, but fair, and I think he's really good boss to have, and it's somebody who really stands behind the riders, and I could really also experience it after the injury I had that he really supported me and kept me on the team and had gave me chance to stay, and also once I had the crash he helped to organize that my family flew there, and and then he just gave me all the time I needed to recover, and gave me contract for the year after, even though I was not racing. So he really kept me on the team and kept me in the World Tour.
I think I've listened to a podcast with Patrick Lefevre, a Dutch one, last week. He was a guest at the podcast of Nicky Terpstra. Mm-hmm. And they of course, he retired now as being the top guy at the Quickstep team. But I think, talking about you and the whole the crash and the injury in Trans 18, it was one of his toughest or heaviest moments as like being leader of the team and stuff like that. So he was talking very nicely about you. That's a cool thing. Yeah.
Thanks.
So 2014 or 15, you turned pro?
14 was my first year.
14 was the first year. How are these two first years as a pro, like towards 14, towards 15? How were those years?
Yeah, I was just like super excited. Was
coming into was a, such a strong
like,
team.
Yeah, yeah, the best team in the world at the moment for sure. And yeah, it was just incredible. And I was super happy to be on the team. The environment was amazing, and suddenly I was next to these stars like Mark Cavendish or Tom Bonen. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, I was riding on the cobblestones in Prague with my brother, and I was shouting like, "I'm Tom Bonen, I'm Tom Bonen." So he was like, and suddenly like we were on the same team, and then you know the guys were like all of them like really nice and welcoming and helping us, and all the big leaders that there were there later was Phil Gilbert or Marcel Kittel. So yeah, they were all really great guys. And I like immediately like started at the team, and I immediately had the feeling like that I can also achieve the results. Like the team really make you believe like, yeah, like you know, like this day we ride for this guy, and then you will have a chance. And so for me, the first couple of months was like supporting role and learning, and then suddenly I got a chance and I grabbed it. So I immediately got some great results. I won the stage at World Tour race in the Tour of Poland later in the year, and yeah, had some really really good results. And so I started super well the career, and yeah, then it was like improved the year after. And then 2016 I just had like amazing spring. And
was 2016 did you see like maybe the race in Strade Bianche 2016 where you finished fifth behind eventual winner Fabian Cancellara, behind Jelinek Stieber, behind Brambilla and Peter Sagan? You finished fifth and in front of guys like Valverde, these kind of guys. Was that one of the breakthrough moments of the career?
Yeah. I mean, like the whole, I think I have already had like a lot of great results before that. But like this, like in 2016, I just I started the season in Australia, and after I came back, I was just somehow on super good form. So I won 2 1-day races in France, and like just before that, finished second on the stage race there. Just because we didn't got a breakaway the first day, and Thomas Voeckler, who was like in the early break, won just like by a second or two, because yeah, we just got him just behind the line. And then I won those two quite big races, Drôme and Ardèche.
Yeah.
I think nobody else yet like won the both races on the same weekend. Maybe in the last couple of years, somebody, but yeah, I was for sure the first one, so it was also a big achievement. And then came the Strade Bianche. I think I really had the legs to win the race, but I hesitated a bit when Cancellara, Sagan, and Stieber did the move, and I was just kind of like thinking, okay, we already have Brambilla in the breakaway, and then Stieber is coming, so it's like better for me to wait in the group and when it comes back together. But I think I should have been more like thinking about myself or more. So that's maybe a bit of regret actually, this race. But yeah, I love that race, and fifth place is really a result I'm proud of.
It's amazing. Yeah, I think Strade was actually last weekend, right?
Yeah.
Did you watch the race?
I did.
It's I can't imagine how tough it is to race that race. It looks so horrendous. But after that race in Strade Bianche, and after the wins in France, of course, you end on with like having really good results in all these races and eventually even winning, in Belgium, they call it the Brabantse Pijl. It's like the Flèche Brabançon, right? Was it 2016 as well?
Yeah. 2016 so as well. That was soon after.
Like a month after or like a couple of weeks after.
Yeah, a month after Strade Bianche. Yeah. So,
do you see that as the biggest win of your career?
Yeah, I think so. It's probably the biggest race on my resume, and also a very special moment because I did the race. I think was the third time I did the race, and or second, but I like first time I did the race. I was just like, I have to win this race, and I want to win it in this way because it's like succession of short steep climbs, and then back then the finish was like 1 kilometer to go was a climb, and then I was like I want to attack and just like go solo, and yeah, then the third year it really happened, and we did like a late move, late attack in a small group together with Julien Alaphilippe, and yeah, that day he really also helped me to win. So he just like rode hard until the bottom of the last climb, and I just like put the attack and dropped everybody. So Cedric was really like amazing moment, and I would say the best race I've done.
Cool. Yeah. When we go on, and this is a topic you have been talking about quite a lot, I think, and maybe even you're getting a little bit tired about talking about it, I don't know, or you like to talk about it maybe, but when you were preparing for the 2018 season in January, you went together with Bob Jungels and Lars Plus towards South Africa to go to altitude, right?
Yeah, it was like a small altitude camp, yeah. just three of us
to prepare, try to prepare as good as possible for the 2018 upcoming season. And then at one point in a training ride, you guys got hit by a truck. And do you remember anything of what happened over there?
I remember like what happened before and what happened like when, I don't know, a few minutes after that, yeah. When I woke up, but yeah, we went there. We was like, we did like 3 days block and then rest day. And this was like start of the second block. And we had really good time because the riding there was very nice, perfect weather. And actually like the day we were riding and I was like, oh, this loop is amazing. There is like no traffic at all. There was very little traffic. And
where was it in South Africa?
It was... close to Nelspruit. I think actually they changed the name already of the city, but it's like maybe 2-3 hours from Johannesburg, mm-hmm. like towards northwest, like close to the border with Mozambique. So we were staying around 2,000 meters. So a really nice place to train. And but unfortunately, this accident happened like soon after we stopped to take drinks and from the car. So before our coach, who was like riding behind us most of the time, like caught up with us. So yeah, a truck went from behind, and I never like got into the details, but yeah, we were actually riding like outside of the road. Like there was very wide shoulders, so it was a straight road, slightly uphills, and the driver like fell asleep or something. I heard he was probably drunk, but I'm not 100% sure about it. But yeah, it happened, and then I just like woke up on the ground, and like took me a while like to remember like where I am, what happened, and then like what was going on. And yeah, at first I just like couldn't move and didn't feel my legs, and was like really afraid that that my spine is damaged, and we were waiting for ambulance for ages, but luckily then although the drive was long, they took me to really good hospital, very like high standard, where they took a great care of me. And in the meantime, I started to feel my legs. So I was just like, we have to be super careful, because I knew my back was badly injured, and not to make some like movement that would damage it. And the day after, I had a life-saving or like health-saving injury where the doctor operated on my spine, where I had 6 broken vertebras. And when I woke up from the surgery and could move my legs, I that was like all I needed. And I just like, from that point, I just knew I can recover, that, you know, that this is fine. And although I had some like issues, and I thought, okay, actually at the moment, I was just happy to be alive and had the vision of being healthy. And I was not like thinking about if I want to keep racing or riding bike, but I knew
just to be alive. Yeah.
I knew that I want to set this goal to come back because of the recovery, that I knew like that I, you know, if I don't have this goal, maybe I don't give the same amount of the effort for the recovery, which kind of was inspired by this with one of my former teammates at Quickstep. And he had like a bad crash, and then he said like he had the vision to, if he didn't have the vision to come back, that he wouldn't like do that much for recovery. So that was like the first thing, and then was a long way, and actually took another 2 surgeries to like fix properly the back. And I think around 2 months in hospital, and like after 4 months I sat on the bike for the first time. Then it kind of like went fast, because like it took me more than 3 months before I could like sit down even like normally, let alone on the bike. And once I was like riding again and moving around, and then I started to feel good again, and I was slowly regaining the fitness.
What a story. It's crazy. 6 vertebrae and probably a lot more injuries as well next to that. And I've read somewhere that you were in the hospital for 2 months, right?
Yeah, was close to 2 months.
Wow. And the first 2 weeks were in South Africa, right?
Yeah. First it was 2 weeks in South Africa, and then I was allowed to do the flight.
Travel.
Yeah. So I did like first like the most of the trip with like a normal plane, and then like a medical plane. And I thought they bring me straight to hospital in Prague, and I thought, okay, they'll just do a few checks and I'll go home. But then like after a week, they just like, oh, another check, and they say, oh, you will need like
6 more weeks,
two hospital. More surgeries, and oh. Like, because they say, I mean, like, they did really good job there in Africa, but they say like, if you want to race again or like, you know, come back to 100%, like we need to like fix it. So I like the lower back, I still have like kind of like a metal construction that's holding the back, and that will stay there. And the upper part, they took the metal out, but it was long and long recovery, like rehabilitation. But yeah, they did really good job there in Prague in the hospital, and I'll be always grateful that, you know, they gave me the chance to race again and to be fully healthy again.
Yeah. Is it a hard thing or a tough thing to talk about for you?
I'm not really anymore, but I always feel like when somebody like mention it or something, that like, you know, I still have some like the emotions come up a bit, but yeah, I mean, like generally I don't think about it, and I kind of like, you know, forget almost that it happened, because luckily it doesn't really like bother me. I have to like take care of my back, exercise, do like frequent physio and stuff like that. But if I take care of the body, it's, you know, it's not really influencing my life, so that's good. And then kind of actually like talking about it always, like, it's a good reminder, and kind of like it's good to remind it to myself. And
yeah, You already talked about it a little bit when we were talking about Patrick Lefevre. It's like, were you out of contract 2018?
Yeah. So I was like, in 2018, I had like a really good contract thanks to the all the results from the previous years. But I was ending it at the end. And
you couldn't ride your bike.
Basically. I couldn't. But I was like not, thanks to Patrick, I was not stressed to, you know, like try to come back early because, I mean, like I could ride already in the summer quite well, but I was not like really fit enough, and it like came down eventually like to the opinion of the doctors that if I will be able to race or not, which was like quite I felt really good, and like I had like a mixed kind of like progress that at first was like super fast, and then it stopped. Maybe I don't know, like I was missing like 30-40 watts to my like normal values, and then like it just like stopped and I couldn't like get there, so obviously that wasn't enough, and I had some like permanent damage in my left leg that some of the muscles were not firing, and I had a couple of like tests for that, and then in the end I was like in October I did some evaluation in the hospital, and then the doctor kind of said I don't think you can race again because you
don't think.
Because he was like, you're missing, I don't know, like what was like 10% power of the hamstring or something, that the muscles were like not firing. Mm-hmm. That actually nobody like knows like where it comes from, but there was some kind of like a nerve damage, and but that was like. What I've been training, and my numbers already at the time came like really to the level. But yeah, like a day or two later, I did performance test in Belgium, and that one was like fine. It was like pretty much same values as the year before,
really?
And then like Patrick saw the results of the test, and then after that he was like, okay, here's your contract for next year. So
crazy, and then. Over a year after the crash, was the first time you got into a race again, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere was it the beginning of January?
Yeah, it was end of January.
End
of January in Argentina.
Okay, yeah. What was it like to be back racing then at that point?
Was at first, I think, like, kind of like unknown that what will be like, both like how will I feel like in the peloton, if I remember like being quite like scared. It was like straight from like in Argentina I did like a lot of pulling at the front, so it was fine and the power was good, so it was just like that one I really enjoyed. It was great to be there. There were also some, you know, some moments when I remember like we were going downhills with like a lot of side winds, and you know, everybody wanted to be in front and was splitting, and I was just like, oh, I just can't do it. So it's also like when you don't race for 1 year, I mean, even without injury, it's like you don't get used to
lose a little
like
the feeling.
Now I think if I went back to the road bunch, I also would be afraid, but then it came slowly back together, and I think like it was great to race again. Especially in the first year, I think I had like somehow I was not like 100% consistent. That sometimes if I had a good day, I was, you know, back on the level. But maybe I did like a stage race and I had like three really good days and 3 days when I was just like off, and I also felt like I was maybe like more tired than normally. So, but it was like slightly improving over the time.
Yeah. I think at the beginning of the podcast you were talking a little bit about the Tour de France as well. When was the first year that you were done the tour?
2016.
And and I think again in 20.
I think it was 21.
21, yeah. Because after 2019 you moved towards a different team, right?
Yeah.
Towards the what was the name called that one?
Alpecin Phoenix was at the time. Yeah. Alpecin de Koning.
Alpecin de Koning, good hair kind of.
Yeah.
What was COVID period for you? Like, it was so strange, right?
Yeah, it was strange. It was not for me. It was not a happy time. I was living in Andorra at the time, yeah. And there was like, it was very strict. And I was living there alone. So. Yeah, I mean, like, it was quite hard. And it was a friend of mine, Jan Hirt, he's now racing for Israel. He was living, like, close to me, and we were talking about, like, should we come back to Czech Republic or not? But in Andreas says, I said, yeah, like, you know, like, after 1 week, the pro riders can be, like, training outside. And if you came back to Czech, you need, like, to go to quarantine for, like, 2 weeks. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, like I will stay here, and he went back to Czech Republic, so I was there and was like waiting, like, oh yeah, 2 more days, 3 more days, and I think it was like 7 weeks of indoor training. And luckily I had a friend who is not a pro rider, just sometimes rides and do a lot of sports, but he was coming over most of the days, and we did like sessions on rollers at my home. Like, luckily the house had like a terrace, so we always, like, if it was not raining, we would take it outside and ride together, and yeah, that was like the only social contact I had. And
got, yeah, a 100% score, like, on Swift.
yeah, probably. And actually, like, yeah, also, like, my girlfriend at the time, she just like broke up with me like after a week of COVID or something.
Really?
Yeah, because wow. I stayed there and I didn't come back. Oh, so yeah, I think she,
oh wow.
So she was like
crazy, yeah. Period.
Yeah, so that was tough. But yeah, I mean, they also did. I mean, one thing, in the end I found my rhythm in it, and after a few, yeah, those weeks we were like spending training outside at least, and you could see the other cyclists, and but for me maybe even worse was like when the racing restarted, like the constant stress, like,
yeah,
to not get sick, to not, you know, like come to the race, that like if you pass the test and you will not be like stranded somewhere. So like this like feeling that, you know, if you see somebody, you are kind of like putting the team on the risk, and it's like I kind of like didn't want to like see anybody. Or I remember, I don't know, I went to a dentist, and then I was like thinking like, oh, maybe like, you know, I have like the open mouth here, and then like it's spraying. It's like how many people she saw, like, okay, if it's like for sure I will be like, you know, test positive now, and like our team will not start. So for me, this was, oh,
it's so, yeah, crazy that
like the constant, like, yeah, it was like we had this rules, like before the race we like couldn't like see anybody for like, I don't know, 3 days or a week or something. So it's like very stressful.
Yeah, it's so crazy that you were like doing all these things to prevent stuff of happening back then, and now you're just walking towards cities and whatever, there's nothing anymore, not even thinking about it anymore. It's such a different world. And yeah, when then a year later, when everything was, yeah, sort of open again or something like that, 2021, you just said that was a year you like again did Tour de France, right? That's also your last year in as a professional road cyclist, right?
Yeah.
For, I think, let me see, you were 29 at that age? That you
yeah,
retired as a professional?
Yeah, 29.
That's pretty young.
Yeah,
in general, right?
Yeah, it's pretty young, but actually somehow I had in my head that I want to race only until I'm 30.
Okay.
And it was already before I had the injury, and like I kind of have like maybe I had like this like bit of tension in myself, and like I really like racing, but I think it's like, you know, not really good for your body, that's like too unhealthy. So I was like, maybe I just want to stop early before it has like, you know, too much negative impact. Yeah. But yeah, the impact was with the crash, I think. Yeah. So it was kind of, but yeah, I mean, for me the main reason was I didn't really have like a big like goal or dream left in the road cycling to keep doing it, because like after the injury, like I really wanted to come back to the full level. I wanted to be like competitive. I had some good results. I didn't win anything, but I was close, or like had really good like top fives and podiums, and the big goal was to do the Tour de France again. And then yeah, I did the Tour de France, and during the tour I was like excited, and I was like, yeah, it's great. But like then I started like the contract negotiations, but I still like had like this like, do I want to keep going? And then like yeah, a few weeks after the tour, I just like knew like, okay, I'm in. I just want to try like something else. For me, like big dream I had was like to do the Cape Epic. Yeah. So I was like, okay, now it's the opportunity to do it, and I kind of like, it didn't excite me to keep racing, because yeah, I think like the injury had a big role in it, that I felt like more tired maybe like from the racing, like that I couldn't like recover as faster, so it was like a big toll. And I think also like yeah, all the accumulated stress from the COVID and all this like things, that was just like
just like
tired, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I wasn't excited about doing it anymore. Yeah. And I had those other dreams and goals, and I always saw like the racing is like a, you know, just a part of the life, and I had like, yeah, was excited also for new chapters.
Yeah. Before we talk about these new chapters, I think it's time for the second round of quickfire questions, and this one will be about the place where we are recording this podcast as well. It's about Girona. So let's start off with first question. Since when are you living in Girona?
Like really living 1 year, but I've been coming regularly for weeks and months since almost 10 years.
10 years, wow. What is your favorite place for coffee in Girona?
Now it's my home. I have my own setup here.
I'm looking indeed at a very cool setup over here. It's looking very nice, yeah.
But other than that, Tramontana.
Tramontana, nice. What is your favorite bike loop to do around Girona?
I think the Oix Baguette loop to do like towards the Pyrenees. It's 6 hours with very nice roads, nice climbing.
6 hours for you, but but not for other people. How long is the ride?
170 kilometer more or less.
With a lot of elevation probably, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think like 2.5, maybe 3,000.
Yeah. Didn't you do it a couple of days ago?
Or yeah, yeah, last Sunday.
I saw it on Strava, yeah. Okay, cool. Have you been to a Girona football club game?
No, not yet. And there is a Czech player now, so I have to go, but I somehow haven't found the time yet.
Okay, yeah. You have to go. It's pretty cool. Yeah. What is your favorite restaurant in Girona?
Bestia.
Bestia. What is your favorite thing to do in or around Girona besides training?
I think going up to San Miguel for a hike.
Yeah, nice. Lovely views over there. I think we were just talking about it before the podcast. I think 1.5 years ago or so, that's I think the one of the only times that we spoke during one of the overland runs when we went in, I think October or November, we went towards San Miguel. It's a lovely place to go out. Huh? What do you dislike the most about Girona?
The traffic lights are like always waiting too long there.
Yeah. What do you like most about Girona?
I love the food, I think. Like the, you know, the, or like the lifestyle of like good food, good coffee, and the community of makes you like, you want to do some sports, so
yeah. Do you have a hidden gem in Girona? Something people visiting Girona should definitely do or visit?
That's a tough one. I think it's like walking through the Devesa Park. I think that's very like underrated, but yeah, very nice place to visit or go for a walk.
Yeah,
I like
sure.
to do it, you know, either early morning or afternoon with the sunset.
Yeah, well, the trees are lovely over there.
Yeah.
Big trees over there. And if you want to have some peace during your walk, don't go on the days where there's markets, I think.
No, not Tuesdays and Saturdays morning.
But the markets are nice if you need some stuff, of course. Well, it's a good shout. So yeah, really living in Girona for like over a year, but you have been here for 10 years already.
I think I came maybe 9 years ago or more than 9 years ago, first time for just like a week or something, and I immediately fell in love, and then since then I always booked some apartment for month or two, and especially like February, March when the road season was starting, or December before the first training camp.
Yeah. What do you you've been here for such a long time already, but now living over here, what do you like most do you like road cycling more over here or gravel cycling?
Now I would say gravel.
Yeah.
But both is amazing. Yeah. I mean, I always do like too much of one, and then I switch to the other, and I was like, oh, why didn't I do it more? And then like, yeah. So it's always like in waves. I always like ride for weeks, mostly on gravel or mostly on road.
Yeah. Do you train a lot with other people over here or mostly on your own?
Usually with one partner. Like I don't have like one guy that or a rider that I do, but I prefer like to ride just with one person generally.
Talking a little bit more about gravel and off-road kind of racing. We were just talking about it before the quick fire question about Girona, that 2021 was the last year as a professional road cyclist. Were you immediately, like in 2022, like switching over towards like the off-road kind of stuff, or did you have like a year in between because your dream was to, among other things, to do Cape Epic, and 2023 was the first time you did Cape Epic, right?
Yeah. No, but I switched directly. I was like hesitating, but then I was like, okay, I will do it. And actually, I was part of the Kenyan mountain bike marathon team, but so I was like fully prepared for like a mountain bike marathon season, but unfortunately in February, just the day before the first race, I crashed and I broke my collarbone, and yeah, it was still like more than a month before Cape Epic. But although I had the surgery, it just didn't heal in time, and I had some like issues of like a strength or like power in the left hand that were from the collarbone fracture, so I couldn't race, and so yeah, that was postponed. But I did like pretty much the whole mountain bike marathon season with like some good success. I was second on one like a world cup or world series race, and fifth at the European Championships. But also on some races I was just like, yeah, like way behind when it was like too technical, and also I did track off. I did one gravel race. I did track off my first race, and I just remember I was just here with my friends and only found out about it like a week or 2 weeks before.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just like came back, left my bike here, and came back to do the race, and I was like, wow, this is really good. But like I knew that the mountain bike marathon, it's not for me. I still wanted to do the Cape Epic, but I was like, the racing, like most of the races, they don't suit me well, and I felt like doing trials
because it's too like too technical,
too technical and too much climbing, okay, and the style of racing was kind of like almost like a time trial effort that you just go pretty much like as hard as you can from start to finish, like not really like tactics or not. Especially not for me, because I was, you know, on the limit always. So it was just like trying to stay in the front and just like pacing myself to the finish. So So I was like, no, that's I don't enjoy it that much, and was not really like didn't meet the expectations. But then yeah, then I kind of like was actually I was ready to stop and even like give up on the Cape Epic, because I was like I'm not like signing for this team, and was kind of like, if I want to do it, I would have to do it, but I didn't want to commit to the full season. And I was like, I want to leave it open. And I did pretty much nothing for like a couple of weeks, and longer than the usual off season. And then I was like, actually, I missed the training. And so I got into it. And then I spoke with the team manager, and they said that they still need like a rider. And I was like, yeah, it's quite late to prepare, but it's like, you know, you can do it. So I was like, okay, let's do it. And I'm super happy that I did it, because then I did the Cape Epic and
was it like what
time.
You were thinking it would be?
Yeah, I mean in a way yes, or even like better. It was like it was really cool experience. The people from mountain bike, they say it's like the, you know, Tour de France of like mountain bike, but I knew like it, you know, it won't be like Tour de France, but was really good. Was really cool, like atmosphere and like, yeah, kind of like some moments, like you race full gas in the first group and you have the helicopter just above you, and then you feel like at the Tour.
Tour de France,
I have to say,
yeah.
Like that was my highlights. I was like riding with Nino Schurter and like the helicopter just above me, and I was like, wow, this is like insane. Like, yeah. You know. So I had like amazing time, and then after that I had like pretty much like no setup, no sponsors for the season. But I was like, okay, there's like Unbound, I want to try it. So I was like, started like messaging like Kenyon. I was like, okay, I'm not part of the team, but you know, I would like to do it. And can you like help me? And there was like issue with like having place there, because you know, like it's very, very difficult to find accommodation. And
it's like a very small village
where
suddenly like whole
it's
gravel
like
world
small
is
town
coming,
and there's like thousands and thousands of people, and you need support at the aid station. But yeah, eventually it worked out, and I came there. I had a great race, finished second, and that really like started my second career. And so it was like I kind of went there out of curiosity, and I honestly, before that, I didn't like expect I would enjoy racing gravel so much, and I kind of like didn't even like want to be a pro anymore, but yeah, it changed fast.
Now you're here second and in your first Unbound immediately in 2023, and who won that race that year?
Keegan Swenson,
and I think there was like a small group with I think Lauren Standam as well, and these kind of guys, right? That's crazy to be like first. I think it's the biggest gravel race in the world, right? It's probably the most important one as well. To like
definitely the most important.
Yeah, to immediately finish second in such a race, like I think it was a sprint in the end, right?
Yeah, it was a sprint. I just had like really good day, and I had also some beginner luck, because you know I had no idea what to expect about the setup, and it was really muddy that year, and yeah, I was just like before that like figuring out what like kind of tires I need, and luckily I had the Kenyon Grizzle. It's more like an adventure bike that actually I bought like probably 2 years before the race, just to like have fun and train on it in Andorra, and it was like almost the stock like set up as you know get it. So it's funny because it was not like anything like super fancy, but it helped me because it had like a white tire clearance. But I had like no idea about the mud. I remember we started the race and I saw like somebody in front of me with like a piece of wood in his pocket, and honestly I thought
what is that,
crazy?
Why?
It's like for good luck or something. Yeah. I had like no idea. I thought it's like a talisman for like a luck. And then we came to the mud, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, there was like a section of like 1 or 2 or 3 kilometers where it was really muddy, right?
A couple of kilometers, and I did a mistake of riding in the mud for like too long, and then the bike got stuck even with the white tire clearance, and then I cleaned it up. But
So you're
and I was like, I was way behind, but I didn't panic because I saw Laurens ten Dam and a few other strong riders. And I was like, okay, we are like less than 1 hour in the race. So we have like 10 hours or 9 hours ahead. So I was like, if we just like, you know, keep riding, we can like come back 2-3 minutes. So and then we were just like riding all day hard and just like turning. And there was like people like dropping because of flats and because they were tired. So I think that like kind of racing really like also helped me. It was like all day of like riding hard, and I could really like benefit from all the years in World Tour. Yeah. And this is kind of effort that suits me well. So I was like getting better and feeling better and better. And finally in the last 50K, I started to believe I can go for the win.
So now when you're returning to Unbound every year, you're putting a wooden stick in your back pocket.
Yeah, we had it. We was like, it was taped to the frame.
Oh, really?
Last year, I think. Yeah.
Okay, wow. Well, of course, amazing. Second in Unbound 2023. And I'm sure you've done a lot of other races that year as well. But then Trans24, especially for Girona, the Traca is a massive event, and you were first place at the Traca 200, right? Yeah. What is the Traca for you? Is it a special race?
Yeah, it's like, if Unbound is the biggest in the world, Traca is the biggest in Europe for sure. And it's really amazing to see like such a big field and the race itself. It's very nice. It's like a mix of roughing and rough like riding and fast and a mix of like riders from all disciplines. And what I like, it's just like, you know, not just the race. It's you can see like there are so many people who come for the experience and to have fun. So I really enjoy that. And honestly, like last year, I didn't really think about winning the race because I thought like the final doesn't really suit me, that it's like too flat. And also I did 3 weeks in US leading up to it, and I the last race was just like 6 days before, so I arrived like 4 days before, 3 days before the race with jet lag before I got here. So I think like racing, without like much pressure on myself, and that also helped me, because also there until like the very end, I didn't like consider myself as the favorite. But luckily, I have this thing that like, once the finish line is getting closer, something clicks in me, and I just start this beast mode.
What is 2025 season has already been starting for you? I think, what is it like now? Like 1.5 months ago, Santaval. First race over here in Girona, of course, the Saturday and the Sunday. For me, it was my first ever gravel experience, so it was I really enjoyed it. It was a really cool weekend. But you were already like really strong in that race as well, right? You finished second.
Yeah, I was second. Yeah, that was a good race. But I was surprised how strong the field was, and I did this race 2 years ago for the first time, as like a prep for the Cape Epic, actually.
Exactly.
And I did it on the mountain bike. I didn't have gravel bike here. I was just here for like a mountain bike training camp. And I just did like the first group of like four or five riders. It was just like timed segments. Now like we raced full gas all day, and until like the final was still like a group of 50 people or so. It was like crazy, like the level. So you can see like the level is rising, and everybody is like upping their game in gravel, and there are more and more strong riders coming from road, from mountain bike. You can see it will be again harder to get the results.
And a couple of weeks ago, just 1 week after Zantafel, you went with almost half of Girona towards Morocco, right?
Yeah,
for a very like, I think for 4 days, very cool race in the June of like the Sahara Desert.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was like yeah, for the stage race. So like I came there because I like to race and to get some like stage racing. So this was like a good opportunity. But I was worried like maybe it will be like too easy or too much like on this like adventure side and like a bit too short. But yeah, the racing there was super hard again. And in the end, it turned out to be like long enough. I think we did like 3 hours of racing on average, some warm up, some cool down. So it was like quite a big week still. But it was just beautiful. Like it really, I think it was like one of very few opportunities that like the area and like the event was like more important than the racing, and that I could really like enjoy like, you know, being exploring the area and also like have time to soak in the nature there. And like especially the second stage was just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Like so beautiful. And it was also so cool because we finished quite early, and then you could hang out with the other riders and also with the people who just, you know, go there for the experience or to race and to finish like way behind, but still like have a great time and to explore new countries. So that's something that ticked like all the boxes for me.
Yeah, it looked like an amazing experience. I saw like some images that you were, I don't know, with maybe the whole start list, or maybe half, I don't know. But like we're sitting on the dunes, watching the sunset and these kind of things.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Cool experience. What is what do you expect of this year? What's the biggest goal?
Yeah, the biggest goal is Unbound. That's it kind of has to be. But there will just be like everybody will be at the top shape, and it's the most important of race of the year. So that's the goal number one, and that's where like it's all leading up to, especially the first part of the season. But in addition to it, there, like for me, it's, I don't really have like particular races that I want to focus on. I just like to race often and to keep the level, and I just build the calendar like based on races that I know I can achieve good results in, but also like races that, you know, I want to like explore or visit or find out something new. So it's like again a mix, quite like a busy schedule of something I've done in the past and that I enjoyed or I performed well, and some new races. So I want to keep it like the big goal will be the Iceland. That's something I'm really looking forward.
Yeah.
Like a big question mark is the Lifetime Grand Prix, because I applied for it again. I couldn't do it all last year because I was sick towards the end of the year and I was like out of the standing, so it was just not like reasonable to do the last race, and so I decided to skip it and just like focus on this year. And but I didn't get the spot at the Lifetime, but I still can get a wild card, which will be like decided after Unbound. So I also will do again the three races in California before Traca. So yeah, now it starts. Actually next week is the Hills, a new race in Italy on the course partly of World Championships year and a half ago, which should also suit me really well. So
is it like a one day or more?
It's one day. One day. And it's pretty long. It's around 170 kilometers. So with short climbs. So that's something that should suit me well. So that's one I'm excited for. And,
nice.
And then I will see how the season like develops. I have a good mix of UCI races and the Gravel Earth series. And I won the GC of the UCI series last year, so I hope to keep that, to defend it. I couldn't do the final of the Gravel Earth last year, but this year I should focus on that as well. So a lot of goals, but you know, when gravel, you also must be prepared, but you also need luck and have smooth rides. So we will see how it develops, and I think the goals might change.
Yeah. What is looking ahead towards the Traca beginning of May? as the winner of the 200 last year. Are you trying to defend the title of the 200 race?
Yeah, definitely. I want to come back to 200. And I saw like the provisional track so far, and
much different
there
than
was
last
some like difference in the final. The final looks to be like really hard, with like two steep climbs in the end.
Okay.
So if it stays like that, will be really nice. So so now I'm super excited, and I'm almost like kind of regretting like doing all three races in the US and thinking like, oh, maybe I should have come here, but everything is arranged, but it worked out last year, so I believe it will work out this year as well.
Yeah. And
so maybe like better to keep the expectation lower, but yeah, I think it will suit me well, and I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, well, a lot of cool things coming up soon. I think it's we've been doing our podcast already, recording for an hour and 20 minutes already. Time has been flying by. So for sure we're getting towards the final part of this podcast, and it's also like getting pretty dark in the room because we started out with a nice sunset and now it's almost dark. But the final part of this podcast, I've got a couple of questions from followers. I asked on Instagram to if people had some questions for you. And first question is, what do your brothers do now?
Yeah, both of them actually live in the US. So that's also like nice that I can visit them during the races. And
in
one
US?
One of them lives in California. So now I will be staying with him during the races.
Cool.
And he works as a product manager for Google.
Wow.
And the other brother, he's way younger, and he's studying. He lives in New Haven, that's close to New York, and he's at university.
Cool places. California, New York, Girona.
Yeah.
Everywhere. you were talking a little bit about it a short while ago, like you're trying to like do everything, like combine all these different kind of things. Why is it that you're trying to compete in both Lifetime Grand Prix as UCI and the Worlds? Why is it that you want to do everything?
Because, I mean, coming from road, I like to race like often, and like I think the Gravel R Series and the UCI is like perfectly like possible to combine. The Lifetime is definitely like more difficult, and now there is a question mark about the world championships, because so far it looked like the last race of Lifetime will like collide with the world championships on gravel.
Oh, wow.
But so then like would be impossible to do it, so I was like, okay, it doesn't make sense. But actually I didn't like want to focus on it at all, but now only like last couple of days I was like looking into the calendar again, and I heard some news like the world championships on gravel might be already like beginning of October.
Yeah.
Which would like make it doable. So
it was supposed to be in Nice, right? But now not anymore?
Not anymore. I think it should be decided in a week or two.
Okay.
We'll see.
A little bit?
I mean, I heard like so many, like I probably like three or four different locations. So,
right. Okay.
So I think I'm curious what,
how
it will end up. But yeah, if it like end up being like beginning of October, then it would be possible to do Lifetime. But so yeah, I'll keep it open, and I will see how the first two races go. And the season is pretty much like lined up to Unbound, or maybe few weeks after that, and then it's like wide open from the beginning of summer. So I know I'll be racing the Rift on Iceland on 19th of July or 20, and after that it's all open.
You'll see, yeah. With the gravel scene becoming more and more professional, you've got teams right now and people are wearing aero helmets and aero socks and these kind of things. Do you think it's heading into the right direction?
I don't know if it's the right direction. It's obvious where it's heading, and I like the performance side of it. Mm-hmm. I don't really like want to see it like becoming a team sport. Not, but I think it's heading there. But yeah, I just hope like for still like for the next couple of seasons, you know, you will be competitive without like having a team, and that we will not see, you know, too much of like team tactics, which like I could already see it at like Santa Val, like yeah, some of the teams like just like, you know, kind of like on the road sending people in the breakaway and then like not riding, and then or just like doing lead outs to the crucial parts and not like turning when you have somebody ahead, etc. So this will make it more and more difficult, but yeah, it's where it's heading, and yeah, I just think it's not yet there, but it's certainly there are a lot of races where the teams will have advantage, and luckily there are still like a lot of very hard races where the team doesn't really help.
Is training much different between road cycling and gravel?
For me, the biggest difference is that I need to like adapt to not doing this stage races, or like not to have that many race days. I used to have like 70 race days on the road, maybe even close to 80.
Yeah.
And now it's, even though I race a lot, I have maybe 25 to 30 race days. I think like standard is probably around 15, 20. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys have even like less, especially the guys who like focus on the lifetime Grand Prix. They maybe like do 10, 11 races per year, maybe 2-3 like training races. So
yeah.
So yeah, last 2 years I did the Cape Epic. That kind of worked almost like a work, like a Grand Tour for me, because although it's just 8 days, yeah, the strain is huge. So I need to do more like a race simulation or more hard trainings to compensate for that. So I think that's the biggest difference is you need to train more of the intensity, and whereas on the road you kind of have like maybe some periods like winter when you like prepare and then you kind of get in the shape by racing. But yeah, now you need to keep the intensity high and frequent.
If you have to choose between one of them all, what is the coolest race you've done?
The coolest race,
the best experience, or the coolest
race? The Cape Epic, but on gravel, now the Sahara gravel. I think that's that was really like cool. And but yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Is there something you miss from road cycling?
Oh yeah, I miss most like the team environment, like or like doing like the winter like training camps or summer like training camps when you are the whole team together, you train together, and also like just like doing the stage races or the races together when you like work towards the team and then share the time together. So this kind of like group environment, I think I miss a bit. But yeah, I mean, generally, like I used to have like the first year after I stopped racing on the road, I had a lot of thoughts of like coming back and a bit of regrets of stopping when I watched the races. But now it's less and less. And I even like surprised myself, like when I was watching Strade Bianche, even like then I didn't have like feeling I want to be there, so
nice.
So I don't miss it at all.
Are you going to be doing more triathlons in the future?
I don't think so.
You've done the gravel triathlon of over here.
I'm always joking like that. I don't like swimming much. I don't like time trials.
Yeah,
and I mean like running. So like triathlon is not a sport for me, but Skrev is perfect because the swim I can get by. It's a beautiful location, and then you race on gravel, and the trail run is also something I enjoy. So maybe actually Xterra, that's something I would like to try. Yeah. But at the moment I'm probably like more tempted to do like half Ironman or Ironman than I was before, but I'm nowhere near like that I'm like itching to to get into it.
All right. Well, that concludes the questions from followers, and I think that also concludes this podcast recording. I think again we are now already probably above 1.5 hours. Such a long talk, but I really enjoyed it. I always like to go to finish off the podcast with one last question, and that's, what is the one thing you would want to say to your younger self?
I would probably say to worry less and like just be like more confident and more in the moment, and I think that's it. Just like go more with the flow and don't try to like think everything out, and
nice. Petr, thanks so much for your time. It has been a real pleasure to have this conversation with you, and I'm really looking forward to follow you along on what's coming up for this season and beyond as well. And it's going to be some cool things happening again. And where is, for the people who want to follow you, what is a good place to follow you around?
Yeah, the best place is probably Instagram at Petr Vakot. So I think I'm most active there, and you should all the reports from what I'm doing there.
All the reports from winning every race almost. And,
and if you want an inspiration where to go racing, that should be the place.
Cool. Petr, again, thanks so much. It's time to finish off this podcast recording, because it's almost like completely dark over here in the house. And thanks again. We are going to be following you along for the year. And that concludes this episode of Grit Grind Girona.
Thank you, Milan. Really enjoyed it.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.